BBC Radio Wales, it's 2:30 past 2. Welcome back to Something Else. I'm Sian Parry-Hughes. With me looking at the papers today, Eileen Jones, Rob Penn and Bethan Jones-Parry. People quite naturally can feel uncomfortable with the idea of voices from the grave. Still, we can expect a lot more of them in the future with the advent of QR-coded gravestones. And QR codes, for those who don't know, are these barcode-like things, but they're square and they can lead you to further information. Well, these high-tech headstones, for example, are linked to websites which will give information about the departed person, and they can include video footage. The first such gravestone in the UK was installed just last week. The technology, though, is being used much more widely in America. QR codes are very common on other items already. I've been speaking to independent mobile expert Terence Eden on where we might find them and how they work.
The great thing about QR codes is they're really simple to use. So the QR stands for quick response. Just about any phone on the market which has a camera can read QR codes. So you can go along to your favourite app store, your phone's app store, type in QR reader, and you'll have a very simple to use QR scanner on your phone. And we see them being used by all sorts of people. We've been running a project in a children's museum in Indianapolis, and the kids absolutely love scanning those. And we're also getting lots of scans from graveyards in Washington, D.C.
How sure can you be, though, that the technology will last? And I speak as somebody who has lots of vinyl records, cassettes, mini discs, etc., which I can no longer use.
Well, technology always changes. That's a given. And in 10 years, 20 years, who knows what we'll be using. The great thing about QR codes is they were invented in the mid-90s, so they've been going strong for quite a while now. They're an open standard, so it's not like you're tied to a proprietary vendor who's going to one day turn them all off. So I think QR codes stand a very good chance of making it in the future.
And nothing is taboo. Gravestones aren't above and beyond this sort of technology, then?
I think when you're dealing with gravestones, obviously you have to be very careful and respect the wishes of the family and the organisation who perhaps run the cemetery. And that's what we do. We never stick a QR code anywhere that it's not wanted.
And you've been involved in a project in Monmouth where these QR codes seem to be scattered throughout the town. So how does that work and what's it all about?
That's right. So the project's called Monmouthpedia. And we aim to make Monmouth the world's first Wikipedia town. That means any notable site or building has got a QRpedia plaque on it. That's a ceramic plaque with a QR code engraved on it. And that means visitors to the town can scan these historic monuments, bridges, war memorials, and they get taken to the Wikipedia page on their mobile in their own language. So there's just one QR code stuck up on a plaque, and when you scan it, it detects whether your phone is in English or German or Chinese and redirects you to the page in your language, which makes it absolutely great for tourists.
And are you able to monitor the use? Do you know how popular these are?
That's right, yeah. We do carefully monitor the use and pass it back to the organisers in the town. And we see great use. What's really interesting is it's not just iPhones which are scanning these, but Androids, BlackBerry is also really popular. And lots of other older phones, which you wouldn't have thought would be accessing this information, can do.
Is there a downside? Does it stop us actually asking questions of each other? Are we getting too reliant on these phones?
There is a danger of being overly reliant, but I think what QRpedia does is it's a great starting off point. When you scan a code, you can get information about a place and then use that to go on and ask the people who live there and work there about it. You don't know what you don't know, so by reading these pages, by scanning these QR codes, you get that first burst of information, which then hopefully encourages you to look for more.
And that's Terence Eden. So Dr. Eileen Jones, historian, we've had tour guides, we've had audio guides, we've had books. Is this a natural progression, do you think?
Yes, I think it is. And I think something will come after this as well. I think your point about how long will this last is a very fair one. But we are applying new technology to our curiosity about the past, and that has to happen, and it's a good thing to see it happening.
What about relying on Wikipedia, which isn't always correct, I'm told?
Yeah, well, there's about this minister in the government who's been altering his Wikipedia
entry
to add another O-level to his massive total of four. But, We know we can't always, we can't rely on anything, Carrier. I mean, you have to check it off against other sources. You know, can we say it's all as bad as crime writers' reviews of each other's work, but every source has to be questioned and has to be, you know, you have to think yourself, do you accept the information? Is there anything you can use to confirm it and so on? But in terms of the family history, in terms of people's interest in the past and so on, I think it's a great idea. I think when Monmouth's work in making it into a Wikipedia town is great fun. I just hope the technology always works, because I do remember a very unhappy time going around Blaenavon when they had just installed new technology signposting there, and it wasn't working, and it was just such a nightmare. So while they work and while they are reasonably accurate and you've got access to other information, I think it's a great idea.
Do you use QR codes, Rob?
Well, I have done. I did a bicycle treasure hunt around mid-Wales a while ago, and we did the whole thing by QR codes. And I thought at the time, because that's quite an interesting way of applying the technology, but I was also uncomfortable with it, because a couple of years before that, I'd ridden from Land's End to John O'Groats with my friends, and the most lasting and rewarding part of that entire journey was not, you know, seeing the glory of the British landscape. It was not being on the bike with my friends. It was stopping to ask directions from local people.
And you were man enough to do that, were you?
Yeah, no, we were. We absolutely, you know, so we decided to do it without a map and without, you know, GPS device, and we just decided to do it by asking, and it was the greatest pleasure that we extracted from the whole journey. It was just terrific for that. And then the other point that I'd like to make about it is, see, I love graveyards, and I love standing in graveyards, and I love standing in graveyards and wondering about the lives of the people. You know, there's a lovely old Indian expression, understanding things makes them go away, and I think to a certain extent that's true. You know, too much information takes the wonder out of it, and so I would hesitate to point my camera at a gravestone and find the biography.
You don't have to do it, do you?
You're absolutely right. You don't.
I think, for me, I think it's quite exciting. I like graveyards as well, but I'm also a great fan of the series Who Do You Think You Are? And yeah. I can see a future now for this series in a different guise in a couple of years' time, possibly. And I would like to know what
who
the family thought. Yes.
Oh, that's clever.
Gosh, yes.
I put a copyright on that quick, Rob.
But it would be great just to hold your phone against your great-great-great-grandmother's gravestone, and suddenly, you know, maybe see
who do you think you are.
Well, you know, it would be fantastic.
It might not be your great great grandmother, of course.
Oh no, you'd have done. You would have done you'd have done your searching.
Yes, but
beforehand.
People didn't always tell the truth in the past, Colin.
Ah, what is truth, Ellen? What is truth?
I think that
brings me to my other point, in the sense that we've all been talking this morning, this lunchtime actually, about this huge amount of information that's coming our way. We're being bombarded by tremendous amount of information. And I think that maybe, from an education point of view, we will have to develop the skill of sifting. We'll have to develop some kind of sense of, you know, how do we get at what's a comfortable truth for us?
I wondered about that, Eileen. As far as research goes, if research for a child, let's say, is holding a phone against a QR code and accepting everything that's then, do we lose the ability to research, to do proper historical research?
Well, that's a big question, because it seems to me that very often children now are assume that if they've looked it up on the internet, it is A, true, and B, acceptable as research. So the QR codes aren't taking it that much further. I do think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in schools using non-digital information more effectively, looking at the built environment, looking at clothes and at food and actual material objects, and using those to enrich a child's experience of life in general and the past as well, and not relying on digital information, because there is digital information overkill. And you've got to think as well about the level at which you're providing the information, how much detail, the vocabulary and so on. So I'd like to think that objects and images have quite as much to tell us as actual QR digital stuff.
Interesting. 13 minutes past two now.
Something else. Part of your Sundays on BBC Radio Wales.